peace, love, and joy will always prevail. Welcome and thank you for tuning in with Nia2X Radio, the voice of the people. We have another heavy broadcast for you this evening. It's the round table discussion, weighing in on one of the world's worst incidents of today. The horrific murder of Tyre Nichols, January 7th, 2023, in Memphis, Tennessee, by five black police officers. And we're hearing lately that there is another Caucasian officer that participated in the brutal attack and assault that led to the murder of Mr. Nichols. This program tonight is Black History is 24/7 permanently. We don't only talk about the greatness of Black History. We talk about Black History, and certainly this case is one for the books. It's going to be very, very historical. We're talking about this ongoing case. Now, we have to say that our sponsors making it all possible is Atlantic Financial Services, providing personal and business taxes throughout the United States. Also sponsoring this portion of our program is the 6th Annual Black Book Fair, hosted by Charles and Lorraine Butler, with two big dates for this upcoming dynamic event that we'll get into a little bit more as the show goes on. So let's welcome our round table panelists. Thank you so much, everyone, for your valuable participation this evening. First, we have Sister Lorraine Butler. I believe she's calling in from D.C. Cliff Pulliam calling in from Maryland. And Kenneth Woodward chiming in from D.C. Peace, love, justice to all of you. How is everyone?
We're fine. I'm fine. This is Lorraine.
Yes, doing well.
All right, all right. So I'm going to start with you, Sister Lorraine, ladies first. This case, you know, this show could be up for the next 5 years, and I want people to know what is going on today in our hearts and our minds, what we're seeing, what we're perceiving. A quick rundown is Tyre Nichols, 29 years old, riding home in Memphis, Tennessee, almost home, stopped by five black police officers, as it was told. Again, this story is unfolding. And he was brutally, viciously, horrifically, unbelievably terrorized, beat up, just really, really beyond assaulted. In fact, he was beat so bad by these police officers, as a result, he died 3 days later. Lorraine, I'll start with you. Your thoughts, please.
Well, thank you for allowing me to be on the program. My first thought was, when I first heard about it, and they talked about the fact that it was five officers, and they were fired for their act. And I said, wow, this is amazing. This has never happened before, that these officers were immediately, you know, this happened on January 7th. We're still in the month of January, the last day. But still, in record timing, these men were told that they were fired and they were going to be held accountable for their actions. And I was saying, oh, things are finally changing. Oh, this is wonderful. Then I come to find out and I discovered that the officers were black. And I said, okay, now that, no wonder. Because that has never happened before. And it just broke my heart, number one, that these officers would do this. But when I saw what the actions afterwards, there has never been a case that I'm aware of that we find out about who the officers are. They have their pictures broadcast on the screen. Whenever they talk about these actions, they always show their picture. And it takes years, months, weeks before any of the other events that have happened in the past when we find out who the officers are, if we do find out who they are. You know, so that's what bothered me the most about the situation.
Fair enough. Kenneth Woodward, you say they call you Kent, if it's okay. Your thoughts when you first heard about this case?
Just as Lorraine mentioned, equally broken up as well. I was also surprised that names were given, picture, all that kind of stuff. All that stuff was laid out. So it was exactly like Lorraine. It's like, okay, cool. Things are changing. Okay, but then wait a second. Yeah. Okay, this is five black guys. So just the massive disappointment, I would say, and the disappointment wasn't so much that, how do I say this? So it was like, okay, it's great to see that the police are taking accountability. That's fantastic. But then once you start to dig a little bit deeper and find out, okay, yep, it's five black officers. Okay, that was heartbreaking. And then as the other details fall out, as you had mentioned, Nia2X, about, oh, wait a second, there was also a white officer. And it's like, police, y'all screw this up so bad. You had an opportunity to start to get it right, and you did it halfway right, and then you completely fumbled the rest of it. So therefore, it made it far worse. I'm absolutely speechless on their inability to bring everybody up, hold everybody accountable. So just absolutely infuriating why it looks like, oh, we're going to put up these black officers as the sacrifice for this, to take the brunt of all of the hatred and everything else right up front. And once again, kind of save the white guy. And I happen to be white, so and we'll just talk straight. So it's just very, very frustrating on how we're ever going to heal if this kind of stuff keeps happening.
Exactly.
Okay, let's go to Cliff Pulliam and your perspective when you first heard about the incident, please.
Well, I mean, that's my thought process is the same as the other two panelists. The quick disclosure of the identities and pictures of the black officers would only have happened with black officers. And then this officer Hempel, who tased him, his name was brought out later. He's fired but not charged. And I understand that there was a seventh officer who still hasn't been disclosed. I'm willing to bet anything that he's another white officer. But, this is nothing new. Black officers mistreating members of their own in the community. I mean, it's as old as, well, James Baldwin talked about it in the 50s. You know, James Baldwin had a thing in one of his essays where he said that the black officers on the force are nothing but N-words to their colleagues. And, they can't strike back out at their colleagues, so they take it out on people who look like them in the community.
Mm-hmm.
It goes all the way back to the days of slavery in Africa. I mean, you know, the tribes who gave up their fellow Africans to the European slave traders were especially brutal. You know, the overseers, the black overseers during slavery were especially brutal. You know, so I mean, this is really nothing new.
Hmm.
And like the other two panelists, I'm still not okay. I mean, I'm still recovering from what I saw.
There's no doubt about it. Again, if you're just tuning in, welcome. You're listening to Nia2X Radio, the voice of the people. We have three panelists tonight on Black History is 24/7 permanently. Unfortunately, we're talking about an unfolding story that certainly will be Black history as the days, weeks, and months come. We have three panelists, and they are Kenneth Woodward, Lorraine Butler, Cliff Pulliam, and they're weighing in on one of the most horrific beatings up to this modern day and time from police officers that happen to be Black, at least that's what they showed us. And I believe it was Cliff who mentioned that in this unfolding story, well, we're up to seven police officers. One is Caucasian, who has not been arrested, who has been placed on suspension with pay, and the other officer is unknown at this time. There's a lot to this story, a lot of street talk in the story, and maybe we'll get into that, but it's all alleged, no facts at all. And all of you mentioned with Attorney General, or the Black Attorney General, Benjamin Crump, wants it known just like we do, that when this case hit the media, the pictures were up, as Lorraine said, and the identities, the crime, they were fired. And after he died 3 days later, Mr. Nichols, then they were arrested swiftly. I mean, it wasn't no hesitation at all. And Benjamin Crump says he wants that to be the blueprint for going forward, this swift accountability, he said, to make sure that hopefully not something, anything similar to the police killing, attacking, and hurting mostly Black citizens in America, that this blueprint takes place. So as mentioned, this case is ongoing. Anybody can weigh in on, like I'm trying to really hold my temper in. I'm very upset about learning today. I learned today about the sixth officer, Preston Hempfield. Anybody want to weigh in on Mr. Hempfield? I understand he used a pepper spray. Cliff, for an example, I know you have been an attorney. You're a retired attorney. Why isn't Mr. Hempfield, to your knowledge and opinion, arrested? Arrested like the other five, not just because of the Black. Is there some type of hesitation? Maybe they're building something. They don't want to, I got to give them the benefit of the doubt. We got a Black female police chief.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering whether there's involvement from the police union, because usually the police union would step in and defend these police suspects. And I'm wondering whether there's a little bit more defense going on for the white officer than for the Black officers. But, there's no real discussion about his involvement other than the fact that he pepper sprayed and he encouraged them to, quote, stomp him out. I think they're still trying to assess what kind of charge they can put forward that'll stick.
Any comments? Ken, Lorraine?
I have a comment about this in relation to a video that I saw earlier before they released the video of what the officers did to Tyre Nichols. And that was that same day earlier on one of those stations, I think it was CNN, I saw what happened to Nancy Pelosi's husband, out in California.
Mm-hmm.
Now, everybody is white in this situation. It seems like, anyhow, the man broke into the house. used a hammer or something to break into the house. They show this on the video. Then he's in the house. They have an audio tape of Pelosi's husband trying to explain that some man is in his house, and I guess he has the man is right there, and he's saying, well, he wants the police to come. And finally, the operator asks him, do you know this man? And he says, no. And I think that that's when they finally sent the police officers out. Now, they asked the police officers asked this man three times, asked this man to put down his weapon, which was a hammer. He refused. And then they show him attacking Pelosi's husband. Now, all of this time, these police officers are there. They have guns. Why didn't they shoot this man? Because my litmus test is always, if it had been reversed and the man that had the hammer was black, that was all that they would have needed to shoot him before he even got to Pelosi's husband. So we once again, we see that racism is involved in this live and well. They do not shoot or kill white men who are criminals and kill people. They do not shoot them. They don't shoot them. And that's my problem. That's my issue with this. We have, and this is a prominent family. This is one of our congresspeople's husband who was attacked in front of the police. They show it on their skin. On the camcorders, and yet and still, he's still alive to tell the story.
I think you also used the example of the U.S. Capitol.
Yes.
Yeah,
on January 6, 2021.
Same thing. One white woman was killed. All of those men that attacked, now they don't even talk about the fact that there were six police officers that died. They still don't talk about the hundreds of officers that were injured from, you know, bruises and scratches and whatever to serious injury to their eyes, to their limbs. Nobody's talking about that. But none of those men all lived to tell the story. Now let's reverse it again. If that had been black men doing the same thing, would they be telling the story, or would you be visiting them at their funerals?
I mean, you're talking about 2023. This is 2023. We're just in the first month of this new calendar year.
Absolutely.
This is absolute. I'm outraged. I am truly controlling myself on this profanity-free program or radio station because I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt. You know, that they're going to find this Preston Hempfield go through the same thing, get arrested, and I can't understand why he's not arrested and who's this other man. It's an outrage, and it's pushing me into insanity. I mean, I am just that outraged. Ken, your thoughts?
To the point on a quick point on the or a quick thought on the January 6th thing. So as a former Navy guy, and you know, being tasked with guarding submarines and all this kind of stuff. Now, I don't want anybody dead, and yet, what mystifies me is that how we had the Capitol insurrection there, and as was stated, how is it that only one person was killed? I don't understand. If we watch any police show, if we watch any movies, if we understand, it's like a lot of people should have been shot because they were storming the Capitol and literally breaking in. So I don't have a category at all for that. And to the point of absolutely, if it was a black group of people, men and women charging that, there would have been more dead. There's just statistically, you can't tell me that that's not true. So absolutely, absolutely infuriating. And on the point of what happened in this case, I despise the fact how it was so, So as Attorney Crump said, this should be a template for how things do happen when things go bad. However, the fact that it was five black officers were able to just quickly put up and kind of hang out to dry, blame it all on them, that is deplorable. Just deplorable.
And when you look at, again, the police chief, Ms. Davis, or Chief Davis, by her being a black woman, and you have that type of power, the only thing I can think, again, is I guess hope that you're hesitating because of maybe two things. The corruption that goes on in police departments are very apparent to most people that consider ourselves awoke, and you know, we know this corruption, it's not only there, it's also in the Congress. It's what kind of favor are you going to do me? What kind of lobbyist has the most money? It's not about justice and law anymore. I don't know if it ever was, but it's so overrun today. Is this a possibility why the chief of police has allowed Mr. Hemphill to make, is it his lawyer? What I'm looking at my watch. I mean, like, when, and why are we covering up or hiding this other person? Is it a male? Is it a female? Cliff said, no doubt he thinks it's a white person. I mean, if this is not modern day slavery, then somebody help me wake up. Comments?
Well, I think that everything that we've discussed over the last couple of minutes regarding Speaker Pelosi's husband and the January 6th, it all has to do with empathy. White folks, well, anybody actually has empathy for people who are similar to them, who have the same concerns and the same lifestyles as they do. So a white officer has empathy for a white suspect, even when he's carrying a gun. He doesn't believe that he's a threat to him because he is him. He's someone he knows. He's someone he could be related to. So he has that empathy. Same with the January 6th. A lot of those marauders were police officers, but they were white, and the white cops had empathy for them, plus the fact that the White House didn't want any really force to be shown because, you know, 45th occupant of the White House didn't want his people to be injured. But it's largely from empathy. Black folks could really learn a thing or two about empathy for their own, because if these guys in Memphis had the least bit of empathy, this wouldn't have gone down the way it did. And as far as Mr. Pelosi, you know, when I saw that videotape, I counted down the seconds. You know, they open the door, the guy's standing there with a hammer, he's got Mr. Pelosi by the collar, cool, and they're fighting over this hammer, and the cops, they open the door, and what does he do? He says, hey, what's going on?
Oh. You know,
and there was about a 5-second pause before he even said that. And then after that, you know, it took like another 5 seconds, them standing there looking at him with this weapon in his hand, and then he goes ahead and hits Mr. Pelosi over the head. Mr. Pelosi didn't even have to be injured because, you know, like I think what was just mentioned, mm-hmm, you know, a black man with a hammer in Mr. Pelosi's mm-hmm house, they would have barely gotten the door open. Bullets would have been flying.
Bullets would have been flying. Lorraine,
it's just a matter of
Ken?
Empathy. That officer had empathy for that white guy with the hammer.
Now, is that empathy or is that white privilege?
Well, it's one and the same, actually. We're really not in control of much, so our empathy doesn't matter as much to as it would to people who actually are in control and influence things.
Yep, I'm asking the group panel. Lorraine, is that empathy to you or white privilege or both? What are your comments about him standing there, as you mentioned, looking or in some kind of froze state. There's something going on in his head, in his computer mind, like Dr. Francis Weldon would say, the computer brain is like, no, I cannot. Is it saying I cannot shoot my own no matter what?
Yes. Yes, exactly. And it's training. I'll tell you, I'll show you another situation. Once again, this is my litmus test for whenever I view any of these situations. I always say, what would happen in the reverse? Okay, in the case of Tyree, Brother Nichols, what if he were a white hat driver and he was stopped by the same black officers? Would they have yanked the white driver out of the car, threw him to the ground, and beat him?
So the big question is, why not? Why would the black officer not do that? Because obviously the answer is no. But now my question behind your question, why not yank anybody out of the car? If you're the so-called scorpion unit, and you go around with this mentality of whoever you think you are or whatever this unit is, you know, made up for, why aren't you, well, Scorpio is supposed to be street crimes operation to restore peace in our neighborhoods. That's the biggest joke. But the question is, why not? I'm a police officer. I'm the Scorpion unit. Here's a car. Let's get him or get her. And the person is white. Why am I going to stop? I mean, I'm going to get the person. I don't care who they are. You know, my mentality.
Now, the mentality is training. It's training. It's brainwashing.
Mm-hmm.
It's conditioning. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah,
it's conditioning. It's conditioning. We have, black people as a whole, have been conditioned to not hurt white people unless we are being attacked. And then, you know, if we can, yeah, we'll just try to defend ourselves.
Sometimes not even then.
But on the most, not even, yeah, a lot of times not even then. I said so, in the, you would think so. And, you know, because they were talking about the fact that Tyree, once he was able to kind of get away, he ran because he was running for his life because he was cooperating the whole time. And after a while, he realized this isn't working. So if I can get away and escape and get to my mother's house, I may have a chance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's just really.
It's a conditioning. And it's a conditioning over years and years and
centuries.
Of conditioning, mental, psychological.
I'll say a few of us are not conditioned. I'm not one of them conditioned ones, and it doesn't mean
I'm not
like,
either. But
like
many
I'm
of
boasting.
Us that are.
Yeah, I think the masses are. I think the masses are, but there are a lot of us that are not conditioned.
Right.
You know, and that's how we got off the plantation. If all of us had been in that fear factor, then, you know, we probably would still be on there. But it took a few to wake up the many to be where we are today. And where are we today? You're listening to Nia 2X Radio, the voice of the people. We're found at www.blackonblackunity.com. We're profanity-free. You can reach us 24/7 with 15 pages of profanity-free shows, and we do it all for you. Our wonderful guest here tonight, we're talking on a very sensitive subject, not just about race. We're talking about, as the Black Attorney General, Benjamin Crump, says, the culture of the police department.
Mm-hmm.
It's the culture, if you want to call that culture, the squad or whatever they are. They're not out protecting us at all, not in my opinion. Ken, share your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm glad you went towards the culture, in that understanding the thin blue line and the requirement once you take that oath. Now, granted, it's a job. It's not a color of a skin. It is a job that if you're not, you know, if you can't handle it, then just take another job. But, you know, the culture there ensures that it protects itself. It's just this protective covering, and you know, the loyalty and everything else that goes with that, that almost seems like the culture prevents you from telling the truth. Because if you have to tell the truth about something that one of your partners did or whatever, then that's going against the group. And so truth can't survive in that environment. It will always be stifled by lies.
Absolutely.
You know, the culture of all of those officers, right? It's not like from the video, it's not like any of them got up after giving the beating and were like, whew, that was bizarre. I've never had to do that before. Right? They got up and they were like, yeah, come on. Let's get some more of that. You know, and it was, I've been here before and I've done this before.
Yeah.
And so I'm deeply concerned that while Tyree Nichols lost his life, I am certain that just by the actions there and the casual nature of it, that other people have been brutalized. They just weren't caught on video, and by God's grace, they weren't killed. But it's just, so when you go back to culture, and I've heard many people asking the questions, how do you reform that culture? To me, it's too ingrained. I don't see a way forward to just reform.
Oh, it's a lot of work to be done from individual households, communities, states, the entire country, because that's the police, and no one is policing the police. Those who are supposed to police the police are corrupt. The judges. You know, you go up to the court and you're going up against an officer, it's street understood that the court is going to side with the officer, especially if your evidence is considered weak. It's truthful, but the courts a lot of times, most times, favor with the officers. We're going to take a quick commercial break because we're going to talk about some of the remedies. We're going to keep talking about the subject as well, but we have to come out of this pit. We have to come out of that. And one of the ways that we come out of this, believe it or not, as an individual, we need to start reading. A lot of people give their opinions, and yes, I give them props. They are reading their telephones. I'm talking about that old-fashioned reading. I mean books. You know, having a rich vocabulary, sitting around under good light and reading books. You read books, it makes you want to write books. Speaking of books, there's an event that is coming up from one of our sponsors, and I want to hear what Lorraine Butler is doing in the respect of reading or what is taking place, because if we get involved in positive activities, we not only can win, we will win. So let's take this commercial break. Come right back to our guest, Cliff Pulliam, Lorraine Butler, and Kenneth Woodward. We'll be right back in a moment. Lorraine?
Okay. Thank you so much. The Black History Month kickoff event for the Woodson Banneker Jackson Bay Original UNIACAL Division 330 is we're having our Know Thyself 6th Annual Book Fair and Authors Forum on Saturday, February 4th, 2023. It will be held at Thurgood Marshall Center in person the address is 1816 12th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 2009. It will be from 12 noon to 7 p.m., so we wish for you all to come on out. It's nice to read things on the Internet and things like that, but it's nothing like having a book in front of you in hand. All of our authors are from the DMV area, and they will be there to, we call it an author's forum because of the fact that the authors, people are there to talk about their books and give readings from their books. So it will be a fun event, and this is our sixth annual event. So thank you.
Congratulations. Yeah, congratulations. I mean, 6 years growing strong. Is it growing?
Absolutely. We fought even through the pandemic. We had to do it virtually for the last 2 years, for 2021 and 22. But we're back in person again at the Thurgood Marshall Center on 12th Street Northwest, 2009, from 12 noon to 7 p.m.
Is there email
on
or?
February 4th. Oh, yes. I meant to add that. There will be a suggested donation of $5 for admission. And the number for further information is 202-787-0251. Once again, that number is 202-787-0251.
That's what I'm talking about. Look, also, thank you, Lorraine. It's tax season, and it's tax season once again. It's tax season time once again. Well, lucky for everyone, Atlantic Financial Services, located 4008 Bladensburg Road, Brentwood, Maryland, is the answer to both personal and business taxes. In the tax business well over 20 years, and Atlantic Financial Services provide federal tax services. That's right. They handle your tax needs regardless of where you are in the country. Of course, electronic filing is available. Give them a call today. Atlantic Financial Services, 240-988-6644. Want to thank both of our sponsors of this program today, and I plan to be at the event with our panelists, one of our panelists, and that is, of course, Lorraine Butler with this sixth annual book affair. You know, before we left, before the break, we were considering some of the things that are tied into this bestiality, brutality. This is what the police department has turned into. I don't feel comfortable. And there are many people that don't feel comfortable, but certainly we're not condemning the entire police force. However, as, again, Attorney Benjamin Crump said, where is the union, the fraternal order of police? Where are they on this matter? Because they certainly would be protecting the white officers we have seen time after time and too much. But where are they in this matter? Has anyone heard anything?
Not a piece.
I haven't heard anything, but I would like to say this. I grew up with a family member who was a police officer and came up through the ranks in a major city in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him telling me once that they would ask you, as a black officer, are you more black than blue?
Mm.
Okay?
Mm.
What? I'll just leave it at that.
I mean, but
know?
What city, sister? It's a big city.
Yes, New York City.
What state? Okay, what state?
New York City. The place.
Oh, okay,
online.
Okay.
You had to name it twice. Yes. And,
yeah.
And I remember him telling me, as a young adult, he was saying that they would question a lot of the black officers. Are you more black than blue? So it is a culture. But then the officers are under another scrutiny in terms of, are you more loyal? They don't ask the white officers, are you more white than blue? You know, you automatically know that you're white and blue.
If we had to see a change, if we had to see a change in the police department, Cliff, what would you want to see change? Maybe one or two things to turn this thing around. I refuse to surrender to what we are being faced with today. We have to decide decisions and ideas and concepts, put them out there, and allow the universe to manifest this overturn. At one time, I'll come back to you, Cliff, people didn't ever believe that black people were going to be out of chattel slavery, especially blacks. There's, you know, ain't no need to fight in this system. It is what it is. Keep your mouth quiet, keep your head low, and go along with it. But there were many that said, no, I'm not going to surrender. There's got to be a better way. And they thought their way out of it and then acted on their thinking. So, Cliff, I'll start with you. How would you like to see a police department in your community?
Well, it's got to come from the federal government, first of all. You can't go state by state with this. For example, I wouldn't trust any police force in any of the southern states to govern themselves in terms of dealing with minority communities. It's got to be a uniform guideline coming from the Justice Department that, for example, will eliminate qualified immunity. That's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that these crooked cops have to feel this financially rather than the taxpayers of that city. You know, when they start
to break it down for the audience before... Cliff, break it down to the audience before we go to the other two. Qualified immunity, we're hearing it a lot. We want to make sure everyone understands the power of that, please.
Well, they're immune from acts, from liability for acts that take place during the course of their duty. And, you know, this is something that's been the case with police, really heavily supported by police unions since the beginning of time. And, you know, with this immunity, unless they do something just completely egregious that's outside of their duties, you know, it's almost impossible to get a judgment personally against a police officer. So if you remove this immunity, then they'll feel it. You know, they could lose their home. They could lose their family. They could lose whatever assets they have because of these judgments that would attach to them personally. So that will temper behavior. And also, they got to be stronger whistleblowing protection from punishment for good cops, so-called good cops who blow the whistle on bad cops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to abolish the blue line. The thin blue line is what stops good cops from turning in bad cops because they get endangered quickly. Their lives are actually physically in danger when they go against their buddies and they cross that blue line. There has to be federal sanction against police departments that punish whistleblowers. That's another thing. There has to be civilian review. There has to be very strong civilian review that would come in and be the arbiters about police misconduct and can actually support the filing of charges. And of course, it's going to have to be a consent decree from the Justice Department that comes in and they just do a soup to nuts oversight of this police department, which I believe will probably happen in this case because it was mentioned that this jump out force has done this before when there were no cameras. That's been confirmed. There have been at least two other black men who've come forward and identified one of these police officers as having done this to them in years past.
Yes, sir. Let's take that same – thanks, Cliff. Let's take that same question to you, Ken. How do you want to see the police department in your community? And then, of course, Lorraine, you could come behind him.
So I appreciate all the things that Cliff touched on. So fantastic. Just completely agree. So I'd also say, it's, has been mentioned places, is a database of officers, right? So if they do something out of line and, yep, it found guilty or held accountable for those kind of things, then how is that officer you know, that, how does, you know, so if it's here in Maryland that they do it and they want to go get a job in Idaho, and he just goes out and says, hey, you know, I've had this experience, great, but that history doesn't follow with them. And it's either the history should follow, or no, you're not allowed to be an officer anywhere anymore, such that it really does, if folks are truly held accountable. And then to me, it's just telling the truth. And so, as Cliff mentioned, the whistleblowers, but just the accountability of being able to tell the truth, because we thought that the truth was told initially from the police chief in Memphis here, and everybody was like, cool, this is okay, we hate what happens, and what happened was wrong and all that kind of thing, but we thought we had a dose of truth, and we found we were betrayed again. Nope, not truth. So let's get to the unvarnished truth, because I can guarantee that since police are human, they're going to make mistakes, and I don't endorse the mistakes, but that's the reality. Okay, let's speak truth so that trust can be built, because otherwise it's just words and trust will never be built.
Mm-hmm. No question, certainly no trust. Sister Lorraine, how do you want to see the police of today and the future in your community?
I think you have to, well, for one, in the past, years ago, police officers had to live in the neighborhoods, or a lot of time they lived in the neighborhoods of the place that they were policing. And that helped to cut down on certain things because the police officers knew the families, you know, because they were part of that community. I don't know how we would be able to get that again in these modern times, but, you know, that's something that's sorely needed. And they need to solicit more in those communities, in your own community. That will be one thing. I agree with Cliff about the review board, the community review board, as well as if these acts happen and they are found guilty, which seems to be almost impossible, even with video, to happen. And that's why I was so surprised that, you know, that it was happening this time until I realized that the officers were black, and then I was saying, wow. So is this going to be a litmus, or is this going to be something that's presented from now on? And then finally, we have to push and push and push for the George Floyd Act to be passed.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that comes from federal government. I don't know how that can happen, but, you know, I think that public opinion, I thought that it would pass, and it's still swinging in the breeze.
Yeah,
those are my thoughts.
Now, as we speak right now in Memphis, Tennessee, this evening, the Nickel family, Attorney Benjamin Crump, the Honorable Reverend Al Sharpton, are at the historic Mason Temple where Dr. King made his last speech in Memphis. Mm-hmm. And they are presenting the latest ongoing developments in this case. And other alleged victims who were brutalized by the Scorpion unit are speaking out. They know one man was 66 years old. Another young man said a couple days before a Tyree was attacked and murdered that he was attacked. And they threw him out of the car. He said they brutalized him. They put a gun to his head, and obviously they didn't kill him. But anyway, they're coming out this evening in their community, Memphis, Tennessee, as the cases are being built. I just pray, and I will not rest until they get this fella, Preston Hempfield. And because he's white, it bothers me. we saw his hand or a hand help us mm-hmm. pray and heard his voice. And he made a statement, allegedly get stomp his ASS. And, you know, just to be put on suspension and mess your case up on a technicality, and he gets to walk. I hope that's the case. I hope we are not really living where I'm a black woman witnessing some form of slavery in my lifetime. I don't think my mind is processing it. It really, really, really bothers me. I mean, you start adding up the deaths of all of them with no conviction: Philando Castile, Terrence Crutcher, Sandra Bland, Eric Gardner, Mike Brown, Rekia Boyd, Sean Bell, Tamir Rice, Freddie Gray. The list goes on and on. Dan Roy Henry, Oscar Gantile, Kendrick McDade. I think one of those names I read did get a conviction, and that was Walter Scott in South Carolina. Jonathan Farrell, John Crawford III, Trayvon Martin, Amadou Diallo. You know, the list just goes on and on. And if those people that are listening only have opinions and don't vote, in order to get people to lose like Trump did his last election, there were more people that voted other than him, you know, for the other opponent. You have to get these people like Mr. DeSantos, who's gone to a whole state of Florida and saying no black history. I'm going to go to you, Sister Lorraine, because I know that struck a nerve in you as a school teacher or a former school teacher, and he wants to throw our entire story into the fire as if we are really irrelevant, utilizing his power that he was voted into office about. Your thoughts, Lorraine, first. No cursing. Well, now. Gonna, we're profanity free.
Excuse me. I'm going to come from a totally interesting perspective. When I heard that, I got thrown back in time when I was in school, and I was bused into a white neighborhood to go to school. And in the fifth grade, you're supposed to teach about American history. And my teacher said that when they got to slavery, she started saying that the slaves were happy to be slaves because they were being taken care of. And I was thinking to myself at 10 or 11 years old at the time, how could they be happy to be slaves? Now, mind you, I'm one of maybe four that's in the class, and the rest of the class is white. I'm thinking this, and then I felt like sinking into my seat at the time. And I'm saying, oh, my God, we're being thrown back to that time again with him in Florida talking about we're not going to. And then the history that was being taught at that time was totally false. But yet and still, that's what she was teaching. So it's unbelievable to think that, you know, we might be thrown back into that time, and it people feel it's all right because each state can do whatever they want to do. So it depends upon the people in Florida to fight that. And then do we have to start saying that nationally we have to force people to teach certain things? Because it gets into a whole political thing with that whole issue of education.
How does, Kim, how does voting, the education, the police brutality in your thinking, in your experience, tie in together if you think they tie in together. And Cliff, you can go behind him if you gentlemen think that they tie in together. And the reason I'm asking again is for the masses not to isolate these huge venues. Voting is isolated from the court system and whatever. I see them myself as all being tied into each other, synergized into each other, and they feed off of each other. Ken, what are your thoughts about that, sir?
I agree. And that's the scary or disheartening thing can be is when we look out at the entire spectrum of all the things that need to be changed, and it becomes overwhelming. So then it becomes, okay, stop a second. What are the things that what are the levers that I personally have to pull to bring about change? I can't go off and, you know, solve all of world hunger and all of world peace and those kind of things. But the things that I have access to is, yes, I can love my neighbor. I can, you know, push my local things. But the vote is something that in America is protected. And that is a lever that every one of us can pull to try to bring about change. And if you don't pull that lever, then the status quo remains. So please pull the lever, you know, at all levels for bringing about the change, to bring about the safety of the Black and Brown communities, and just let's bring about the tomorrow that we want.
Oh, thank you. Cliff, your thoughts?
Well,
you got 3 minutes.
The voting is important. The problem with voting, though, as long as there's still an electoral college, the minority gets an undue amount of influence. It's not one person, one vote. That's one thing. And the other thing is the voting is what puts you on jury panels. I just had my first summons for jury duty this week. My first time in my whole life. I've been voting since I was 18.
Wow.
And I was on this panel of 55 panelists. And we were asked questions en masse in the courtroom by the judge during the voir dire process. One of the questions was from the judge to the panel, because you're supposed to stand if you answer yes to the question. And the question was, is there anybody who basically doesn't trust the police? Is there anybody who would have a problem believing something that a police would say just because they are police? And don't you know that I counted the people in this panel demographically because, you know, as Black folks, that's what we do, and there are not a lot of Black folks. There were five Black folks. There were like five or six Latinos, no Asians, and the rest were white. Half the room stood up.
Mm-hmm.
White folks stood up. And you should have seen the looks on the judge and the prosecutor especially and the defense attorney's faces when that happened. So now everybody has to go up and be interviewed one by one to respond to why'd you stand up to this question. So when I went up there, of course, I detailed to the police, to the judge, all the mistreatment that I had endured since I was 15. And later on driving luxury cars and being pulled over in New York and L.A.,
mm-hmm.
Mind you, this is during the Giuliani 90s, the jump out squad,
mm-hmm.
the crime team that killed Amadou Diallo.
Mm-hmm.
So judge asked me, you know, is there any way that can change where my attitude would change? I said, I'm 66 years old now. I'm two-thirds of my life. I've looked dimly upon police. I don't see that changing now.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, on the one hand, I was conflicted because this is a Black defendant. All right, he's supposed to have a jury of his peers. But we all got excused. I think there maybe were about 10 people left after we got excused. So that defendant, that trial went on this week. I don't know what the outcome was, but I'm sure he was toast. I'm sure he got convicted. So on the one hand, you know, you have to be there to make sure that the jury is not influenced by anything other than the facts and the law. But on the other hand, you have to be truthful during voir dire when you're answering the judge's question. You can't lie to the judge. You know, I felt like I maybe needed to stay behind to watch out for this guy's rights because, you know, this jury of your peers is a myth. It doesn't happen. All right. And it didn't happen in this case. So, yeah, the voting is a mixed bag. It's kind of anti-justice.
Well, I hope we got a lot of good information out for the public. It certainly was a lot of good information for myself. We're at the end. If you'd like to do a part two, you're certainly welcome to, because this is a very critical time in history. Yes, Black history, but world history, but especially Black history, because we're at the bottom. We're most affected by the ills of the world that we live in. It won't be forever. We are fighters. We are conquerors, and we fight back, and we fight to defend what is right. And so tonight's program, in honor, in the memory of Tyre Nichols, his family, and all others that are unknown, that have been brutalized by the forces that have raised their hands to swear to protect and preserve the peace of the society, but who in secret have vowed to do something else. We honor those unknown names, men, women, even children, who have been murdered. And it just won't last forever. I want to thank our guest, Lorraine Butler, Cliff Pulliam, and Kenneth Woodward for coming, sharing your intellect, sharing your thoughts, sharing your hearts, sharing your information with the world to begin the dialogue, to look straight, talk straight, act straight, and to get up and take our rightful places in society, because these devils in the flesh will not continue to prevail as long as we are determined, people of good will. Again, Dr. King said it, and I agree, it's not the color of our skin. It is the content of our characters. Are we honest? Are we thieves? Are we righteous seeking people? Do we do unto others as we would want them to do unto us? And we can have heaven on earth if we claim it. We're up against big media, who is a major culprit in controlling the minds and the thinking of the people, and some of the other institutions we named, like the courts. They're no good. They're just no good. I'm sure there's some good found in there, but they probably get smothered, because you can see from the so-called prison system, if that's not Satan's playground, then you don't hear my voice. You lock up a man or a woman for 18 years in some what they call solitary confinement. That's no rehabilitation to that human being. So people of the world that believe and have faith in the Most High God, we can win, and we're going to win. We're going to fight until we win. The only thing is, the fight doesn't have to be another 300 years. For every voter out there that doesn't vote, or for every non-voter who always has some type of opinion of why you don't vote, then vote. vote for the stop sign in your community. You may want a mailbox. You may have too many mailboxes. Find out how the process works because your one vote does count. And we're looking at the 2024 elections. We don't want no DeSantos. The Honorable Reverend Al Sharpton is calling for 10,000 to meet him February 15th in Tallahassee, Florida, where DeSantos is taking my history, black history, our history, to suppress it and whatever he is attempting to do with it, and we're not going to take it sitting down. So again, thank you to the listeners. Thank you to our distinguished guest. I will be calling you if you'd like to come back, and you too can vent like you hear me venting right now. I told you from the beginning, I am upset. I got to see Preston Hemphill arrested like the other five black devils that murdered our innocent brother, Tyree Nichols. I am beside myself that he has not been arrested. So thank you to our sponsors, Lorraine Butler. They have the book fair coming up. Lorraine, again, the address, the date, and the number, please.
The address is at the Thurgood Marshall Center, which is the historical.
Give the address so we don't get cut off.
The address is 1816 12th Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. It will be February 4th from 12 to 7 p.m. And it's the Know Thyself Book Fair and Authors Forum. And the number is 202-787-0251.
Thank you, everyone, and keep the faith. Keep the faith, because God is watching what we are doing and what we're not doing. Peace, love, and justice to everybody. Fight the good fight.